Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to violence, the word and the act. While violence cloaks itself in a plethora of disguises, its favorite mantle still remains.
Jack Mangan's Deadpan Podcast. Hey everyone, get out your big vinyl copy of We Sold Our Soul for Rock and Roll, and then play it at speed 78, because this is Deadpan number 78. I'm your host Jack Mangan, aka the Prince of F***ing Darkness. Yes, we bleeped out a curse word, and yes, this is an atypical Deadpan. In fact, I don't think I'd recognize a typical Deadpan. It's the return of the interview. Our special guest is also a return guest. It's hockey columnist John Buccigross from ESPN, and wait, don't click away. He's also a really funny, cool guy, so even if you're not that interested in sports or hockey, it's a good conversation. Another reason why this is an atypical episode is because it's not coming out on Wednesday night, because I'm actually traveling to Seattle, home of Deadpanite Jeremy from Seattle. I'm actually not going to try out for Jeremy's rugby team, going for the day job. But hopefully he and I will get a chance to get together and just shoot the breeze. So how's this going to affect the Greasy Jelly Bean game? Well, you guys all made your predictions based on the Wednesday night, so it wouldn't really be fair to suddenly change the game at the end. So we'll still, the Greasy Jelly Bean game winner will not be announced in this episode. And if you're wondering what that even means, it's that since we get a bunch of comments on every episode, we try to predict how many comments there will be on Wednesday night the following week at midnight. However, I won't be around to do this, so we'll play the game correctly. The winner just won't be announced in this episode. All right, this is truly Babel. So I'm going to play a little promo here for something that already happened, but something you can still go and check out because it's also available in podcast form. It's something very cool, and I don't know, I'll explain it after I run it. So this was all a complete waste of your time. Sorry.
Greetings, this is Paul Cole from Beam Me Out. And this week, it's my pleasure to host a very entertaining story by author Jack Mangan. We will be doing The Unsolvable Death Trap. I hope you'll join us for this Saturday's broadcast and the podcast at www.beameup.automatic.com.
Well, actually, I guess that's pretty self-explanatory. Yeah, Paul Cole did a wonderful thing and read my short story, The Unsolvable Death Trap, on the air at WRFR, that's a station in Maine, and also on the Beam Me Up podcast. So it's actually in my iPod, and I'm set to listen to it during my traveling, and I encourage you all to check it out. That's it. Thank you very much, Paul.
Hi, this is Christopher Moore, world-famous unknown author on Jack Mangan's Deadpan Podcast. Keep listening.
All right, Deadpan listeners, returning to the podcast is one of my very first interview guests, and it was a great honor and privilege to talk to him the first time. It was a lot of fun. This is really, in my mind, one of the foremost experts talking about professional hockey, right, basically in the world today. He's an anchorman and columnist for ESPN, and also a music buff. So welcome back to Deadpan, John. John Buccigross, everyone.
Good to be here.
So with all that said, my first question, so tell me, Men at Work had a third album?
Absolutely. two Hearts. I think by that point, Jerry Spizer, the bass player, actually, I believe he was the drummer. I think John Reeves was the bass player, and Ron Streichert. I think Streichert had left to live in Montana with his family underground. Some strange stories surround the former guitarist, the Men at Work. So by then, it was just, you know, Colin Hay, pretty much, and the keyboardist, which is slipping my mind right now. It's pretty good that I can name four of the five Men at Work members. I think that's pretty strong here in 2007. It'll come to me at some point in this interview. But so by then, I was just basically, I think, a two-man band. And there were a couple of good songs on there. And like I said, Children on Parade was one of my favorite Men at Work songs and happens to be on that. I have that in cassette form. I had all the first three Men at Work. You know, originally, I had bought them in cassettes. I was in high school at the time. I went back, and once CDs came out later, I did get the first two, Business as Usual and Cargo, but I never did bother to get that. I don't know if they even pressed Two Hearts onto a CD, but I had that somewhere still in cassette form. Very vital information. I'm glad you began with that.
Yeah, that's much more important than the upcoming NHL season or your book or anything. I am impressed that you know that, though. But all right, well, let's talk about the stuff that that really is important. And I'm sorry I neglected to mention that in your little intro, is that this is big news. You have a book out about Keith Jones. Let's talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, Keith is presently on the Versus Network for the national games in between periods, and he also does the Philadelphia Flyer local telecast as a game analyst. Also mm-hmm. appears on a morning radio show in Philadelphia, a very popular show on their WIP, which is a big sports station in the Philadelphia area. And so he's in a lot of places. He's out there. He's seen a lot. He's always been very popular. He's young. But he throughout the years, as we would hang out, I first met him at ESPN when he began his post-playing career as a television guy. I got him right from the beginning. And he always told a bunch of funny stories, and I always thought it'd be a good book and a book that people certainly in Philadelphia would perhaps enjoy, because he is pretty popular there and he's on TV a lot. So I thought it'd be a good little hockey story and get take a shot at writing a book. Is something I've always thought about doing, and as a lot of people do, especially people who write. And I thought it'd be good to start off with Keith and work with a local publisher around Philadelphia and see how the process went. And all in all, I'm pretty happy with it and thought it came out pretty good.
Well, that's great. Yeah, I look forward to getting a copy. And what I dig about this is that it's a book about, no disrespect at all, Keith Jones, a great, even I'm a Devils fan, so, I'm supposed to dislike him. But, he's a great, great blue-collar guy. And, rather than going for a book about one of the obvious superstars, it's, I guess the equivalent would be, writing a book about Mookie Wilson as opposed to Babe Ruth or Hank Aaron or something.
The first time Keith Jones has been made an analogy with Mookie Wilson. I'm certain of that. you just made history, Jack. Admittedly, one reason why I wanted to start with Keith is because he is Keith Jones and not Ray Bourque. If I'm Ray Bourque, I wouldn't want me to write a book on him if I'd never written one before. So, like I said, I want to kind of start small and simple. And Jonesy's story was one where, but it became more interesting as I talked with him. And it has a couple of tragic elements. His brother committed suicide. He befriended a young kid with cystic fibrosis when he was a rookie with the Washington Capitals and really got close to him. And that kid eventually passed away. And the book kind of bookends around those two moments. And in between is kind of Keith's journey to the NHL, which really probably shouldn't have happened. He was he never played major junior hockey in Canada. Was never really looked at all to be a major player when he was 16, 17, 18. The day he was drafted, he had no idea the draft was even taking place. This was before cable and the internet, and it wasn't the same as it is today.
Right.
And so just an interesting way, just almost a miracle that he got to the NHL and how he, and also that he never really worked out. He was never really a fitness buff. So again, besides his talent and lack of real work ethic, he made it to the NHL. And then from there, he suffered a devastating knee injury that was misdiagnosed by doctors. The wrong kind of surgery was performed on him, and thus he had to retire early. So all those elements, plus he got to play with Peter Forsberg and Joe Sakic and Patrick Waugh and Eric Lindros and John LeClair, and some funny stories along the way. And so it all, made it to a nice, solid 180-page book that is an easy read. It's nothing earth-shattering here. This isn't Homer. Maybe Homer Simpson, but it's a nice, simple, easy read, and it's told in the first person, so it's Keith talking to the reader. And I always feel like we deserve more hockey books in America, and it's certainly gotten the short end of the media stick. So I'll do whatever I can to make any kind of contribution, however small.
Okay, great. And I'll repeat something I said from our first conversation, is that a lot of my listeners are not necessarily sports buffs or even hockey fans. So I guess tell them a little bit on why they would enjoy the book too.
Well, I think it's an interesting story about how someone being pretty honest in terms of not having the greatest work ethic and maybe not always working out, but someone who kind of understands how things work, who knows how to get from point A to point B, and that's certainly a skill and a talent in itself to figure things out. And as you go through this life, the more things you can figure out, it doesn't really matter what kind of economic background you came from or your education level. There are steps, basic steps that we can take in any endeavor to get where we want to go. And for Keith, he made he had a slight plan late in the game with how he was going to get to the NHL, and he kind of went with that, and it happened. And he kind of did it on his own terms, his own guy, a bit of an iconoclast. And so I think that will can resonate with some people as well.
All right, and here's where, this is the flatter the guest portion of the interview, is that I'd say people should absolutely go to ESPN.com and search for John Buccigross and read your columns, because the buzz I've seen about this book is that it's full of your kind of your distinct writing style and your unique witticisms, which, just have made your column, which is where you've gotten this legion of devout followers who just can't go a week without missing your columns during the season.
Yeah, that's still very surprising to me, but certainly I am very grateful, and yeah, if you do like my column, and that's one of the more satisfying emails I get from people around the world who do read it, say I read it, I'm not even a hockey fan, and that's very flattering. I do cover some pop culture boundaries, but it is basically a hockey column, and it's 95% a hockey column, but I will touch on other things. And in the book. So if you do like my column, you will probably like the book. They definitely are. There is some symmetry between the two for sure.
Great. All right. And then before we move on to the season, tell me what's
and the book is available, Jack, at Amazon.com and any other fine internet outlet. And perhaps at a border. If you live in South Jersey or Eastern Pennsylvania, perhaps at a Borders as well.
Okay. Yeah. And we'll
Barnes and Noble.
I'm going to definitely, I'll put some hyperlinks in the show notes, so people can order it directly. Yeah, definitely plug away. And that's actually what I was leading to is tell me what's, so it sounds like it was a good experience for you to write this book. So I'm just wondering about the future of John Buccigross, the author.
Well, I wouldn't call it a great experience. I'd describe it pure hell.
No kidding.
It's very difficult. I'm a perfectionist by nature. And I would go over it, over and over and over again. I would read the same chapter 50, 60 times just to make sure every sentence was how I liked it. Unfortunately, there were still some grammatical errors that I don't think were my doing. I know it was kind of redone by a copy editor in a few instances, and so that was a little disappointing. Not many, like a handful, five or six, but one's too many in that situation. Mm-hmm. And but it's difficult. It's a grind. I kind of went through my whole year of writing my column, and then I kind of wrote Jonesy last summer, so I didn't really have a break. And then bam, then last year started, and I never felt like I really got to recharge my battery. So it was a bit of a grind, and like I said, I'd never done it before. So you have those anxieties that kind of go along that can definitely sap your energy as you're trying to perform a task. So. It was difficult. It was tough. Now it's very rewarding when you see it and you can hold the book in your hand and you can go through it and say, oh, this isn't that bad. It's pretty good. I was able to pull this off somehow with really never having any kind of textbook. But that's kind of one of my mantras in life. I kind of like to kind of go on my own. And if I'm driving somewhere, sometimes I don't like directions. I like just to figure it out. Even if I get lost, I can learn about new roads. And then eventually it all comes connected over time. And that's how I kind of looked at the book process.
All right. Well, great. And, definitely congratulations on getting it out there. I look forward to reading it. And I do hope that in spite of the hellish experience, I hope that you, I hope there'll be more. I look forward to more as well.
Well, I started talking with Barry Melrose last spring. I figured he was there every day. So I started to get kind of his life on tape. And as long as I can get the ball rolling here, and I think I'm going to take my time with this one. But even before I get a publisher, I'm just going to kind of go with it. Hopefully Jonesy will do well. It's off to a pretty good start. Mm-hmm. And I can go to a publisher and say, hey, I was able to move this many books. I have this Barry Melrose book all completed. Here it is. What do you think? So I can kind of do the Melrose Book without any deadlines. That was part of the stress the first time around, are deadlines. We all hate deadlines. Mm-hmm. And so I think I was going to take my time. I'll start, you know, talking to him again. He comes in ESPN twice a week. So, and so that's been a fun process to go through Barry's life in hockey. And we're kind of up to the point now where he's just kind of been coaching. That's where actually where we left off last spring during the playoffs when he went back home when the season was over. I kind of get up to the point where he's beginning his play his coaching career. So hopefully we can see a Barry Melrose Book sometime, perhaps the end of next year for the Christmas season in 08.
Excellent. Yeah, that'll be popular with the barbers, I think.
Yeah, you know? Well, and of course, maybe unpopular. Yeah, they would prefer to cut that hair. Obviously, he doesn't do it very much. But obviously, the name of that book will be Mullet. An extreme close-up of just his face. I can picture the book cover, just his face with a big cackle laugh and his big, gigantic teeth and all that hair, and just be Mullet. Barry Melrose, My Life in Hockey.
That's perfect, yeah. All right, and speaking of that, let's talk a little bit about the NHL. And I have one more goofy question. We'll do some serious banter, but who has the... Well, actually, you talk a lot about great hair in the NHL, but who's out there? I mean, who's our modern-day Al Iafredi? I mean, who's the worst hair out there right now?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the comb-over, you know, mullet is just something that will never be duplicated, really, in the history of hair. And Al is a great guy. In fact, Keith talked about him, you know, because when Keith came up with Washington, that's where Iafredi was. They called him the human highlight film because he was very giving to the rookies. But, yeah, when the hair started to go, he just – But nowadays, of course, guys will just—they'll usually shave it all off. Just cut it all off, and mm-hmm. So it's harder to find really bad hairdos anymore. Usually, you have to go. Plus, they wear helmets, so but the coaching ranks is usually the best place to find some interesting hairdos. And I'd say right now, Randy Carlyle has the most interesting hair, and also he's a complete. The five-time winner of the Benny Hill lookalike contest. I believe my column, which will be posted Tuesdays this year on ESPN.com. We're actually going to do a Tuesday, and I'm going to do like one or two emails, and then at the end of that, I'll say, you know, come back Thursday for the rest of the email bag. They wanted to kind of get more output out of me for the same price. So the email bag is kind of popular, so there will be very small, just one or two samples of emails, questions, and the column comes out Tuesday, and then you have to come back for the rest on Thursday. Not my idea, kind of sneaky, but hey, what am I going to do? When Mickey Mouse talks, you listen.
I guess you're going to do more work. I guess that's what
ESPN
you're going to do.
ESPN is owned by Disney, for those of you who understand that. Disney bought ESPN in 1996. So when you hear any kind of Mickey Mouse reference, that's what we're talking about.
Okay, right. Speaking of Barry Melrose, now you and Barry are going to be doing, I say Barry as if I'm good friends with him, you and Barry Melrose are going to be doing a podcast yourself,
Barry,
right?
Barry's like Pele and Cher and things like that. All you need is one word.
That's right.
Yeah, there's some talk of that. I'm starting to have second thoughts again because I'm offering all this stuff for free. And, you know, so I feel like I'm getting taken advantage of. But, yeah, that was the plan, to do some podcasts. And, you know, like I said, once in a while I'll get some emails saying how much people miss NHL tonight. And I know it's more just because it was a half-hour hockey show than it was me. But, because it was great to have a nightly half-hour hockey show, and I'm sure for the hockey fan, it was, you know, it came out of nowhere when ESPN2 went on the air. There was never one before that in America, and there hasn't been one since. So I'm sure it was almost like this utopian time for a hockey fan to have this half-hour nightly highlight show where people give such reverence to the game and show all the highlights. And of course, you know, that was just a great time, and a lot of people grew up with that mm-hmm. with that show, and so it's gone now. So, you know, hopefully we can kind of maybe perhaps bring back at least an audio portion of the NHL tonight on ESPN.com.
Yeah, that would be great. And I'd say that was a golden age. I remember watching an East Coast game on ESPN, a West Coast game on ESPN2, and then NHL Tonight. I mean, that was a golden age. Enough dwelling in the past, though. How about the future? I mean, this season, what's... I mean, it's actually right now, I'll plug your column a little bit. Right now, I see you have a bunch of predictions out for where you think the teams are all going to end up.
Yeah, usually I do 15 teams in the West and then 15 teams in the East, and those are my first two columns of the year. I'm under contract to do 36. People always ask me why I don't write in the summer, but I don't. I'm not given the option. I'm not sure if I would take it. I really need the time to reload. I really pour a lot into this. I pour a lot into everything, but I pour a lot into this mentally, and so those are my first two. Historically, of the year, the two previews where I rank every team in each conference, and then I give them each a song lyric that's a bit applicable to their situation. Sometimes it comes easily, sometimes it's forced. But this year, I actually, again, being in a giving mood that I was, I broke it down to, instead of doing 15 for 1 week, and 15 the next week, I actually went in increments of five. So we did five teams 3 days in a row for the West, five teams 3 days in a row for the East, and I only charged ESPN two columns, even though it really was six. I'm pretty easy. But but I really wanted to write more for each team. I wanted to kind of, you know, try to encapsulate kind of a feel for each team, not just names and numbers, and they add this guy and subtracted that guy, but just kind of offer little different things on each team and try to set the tone and set the mood on what perhaps you could expect. And so, yeah, that's how I kicked off the year. And now, right now, I'm working on the first non-preview column of the year. And I think how I'm basically going to start it is that, and I'm sure by the time people actually listen to this, it've already been out. But just if they can, you know, they want to listen to how the process works, I'm just kind of going through. The NHL season's about a week and a half old, and here are so many things that we know. And once I'm done with all that, then I'll put the number in. Right now I have 29. Who knows how many things it's going to be? It could be 8, could be 612. And of course, the first thing is the uniforms. It's obviously the big thing you notice right away is the uniforms. And my first line I write is every NHL player looks like they're wearing a boys medium purchased at the Express at your local mall. You know, that's something you would expect a weightlifter in South Jersey to wear out for a dinner with the missus at Applebee's, but, you know, not Andrew Cogliano at St. Joe Louis Arena. They look kind of, some of these guys really look silly. And the San Jose Sharks may have one of the all-time worst uniforms in the history of sport. I haven't seen their darks, but the white is just unbelievably horrendous. So that's the first thing is the uniforms. Like I said, I'll just kind of go through the process and just kind of, you know, write what I've seen so far, and that'll be the first column.
All right. Well, cool. I mean, you know, and it's exciting to have that stuff back. It is exciting to have your column back. An NHL season, I'm not trying to completely overwhelm you with the flattery and praise here, but if an NHL season without your column, I don't know, it would be lacking.
Not much, but I do appreciate that. And it is fun to have that big forum at ESPN. You know, I always thought when I first started, when I proposed to write the column back in 2001, actually it was 2000, and it didn't really start till 2001, I just felt like, you know, America and the United States didn't really have a national, maybe, voice to talk about the game. And, again, give reverence to the game and respect the game and detail and history and even now in present-day form. I watch every game. I feel that's part of my duty. To understand what's going on around the league and to watch every game, and I do. I'm watching the game going on right now and the Oilers and the Red Wings, and that's just. But I enjoy it as well. So luckily, it's not work at all. But I just felt that, you know, I felt that the site in our country in the U.S. deserved that. Canada has plenty of options, of course, in their media, but we always don't hear. So I'm grateful that I have that ESPN.com platform to write in.
B-A-S-O Domine.
Man's dead is the way.
Unrelated thought. No matter how delicious and spicy it may be, jerk chicken will just always be funny. Sorry. So will soda jerk.
I am staring down a microscope, looking at little dead marine worms floating around in formaldehyde. Earlier today, I was standing between two houses in a subdivision, and I could plant my hands on each house without reaching. Does that seem right to you?
You know what, let's take this opportunity here. And I kind of wanted to touch on this anyway. Let's kind of sell the game. I mean, you know, I think what has sold, the reason why the NBA was huge back in the day was because you had these incredible personalities, and not just Jordan, but, you know, you had the Barclays and you had all these great personalities. And the NHL, they're there, but, you know, they're kind of under helmets, and they're nice guys. You know, they're NHL hockey players, so they're just kind of, even though they're out there on the ice and they might get rough on the ice, they're just nice guys. You know, it's the classic stereotype about hockey players. You know, but there are a lot of great personalities out there that people are kind of missing. I don't know. Like I'm gonna miss Gomez. I mean, all these great, interesting guys out there.
Yeah, and there are, but I don't buy the helmet thing because the NFL wears helmets, and that's obviously the most popular and lucrative sport in our country. And maybe the personalities and the huge names aren't quite there yet. We're kind of in a regeneration portion of the NHL when we lost Messier and Yzerman and all those guys kind of at once, and Lemieux. So now, you know, people like Crosby and Ovechkin, and there's a great wave of young people. So it's just gonna take time. As the 15, 16-year-old right now who's going to grow up with Crosby in 10 years, Crosby will be a 10-year vet. He'll still only be 30 years old, and that 16-year-old will be 26 years old, and he'll be on his way to having a good job and be able to start, you know, really spending money watching hockey and going to hockey games, and that's kind of how it works. So I think right now we're in a bit of a gap that way, and so you'll see it again as these legends are, you know, start to grow and start to pick up, and hopefully, you know, the game can get back on ESPN or it is on NBC, but to be kind of more of a nightly presence or a presence where people can see a game and these guys can kind of start to, and the league can start to build up these guys so they can get that reputation and kind of, you know, give that aspect of the league that, like you said, may be lacking a bit.
Mm-hmm.
But the league is, it's 90% foreign. And I always said one reason why the NFL is so popular, it's 100% American. And certainly, you know, the NBA is now going to slowly, you know, get that issue as well as it gets more and more foreign. And you know, these guys are all from, there's 10% from the U.S. roughly, and the rest are from foreign countries. And a lot of them from Europe, of course, and 30% from Europe. And these are names that are hard to pronounce, and no one knows who they are. They come out of nowhere. With the NFL, we follow them through high school. You know, these big prize recruits. You know, Jimmy Clausen was a household name practically at Notre Dame before he played one down in Notre Dame. And once they go through college football and the NFL draft, you know, we know all these players a lot. And, you know, we don't know these. It takes a while to learn these NHL guys. You just don't have that same immediate relationship with them.
That's a great point. Yeah, the NHL, it's a league full of punters. You know, you're right. It's all, you
yeah.
know,
and you know, outside of the Crosby, of course, and a few others, they're all basically, you know, field goal kick holders.
Now, actually, let's go back to another point that I'm pretty sure that you've made in the past about the helmets. Is that, you know, the NFL? You're right. These guys are all hidden under their helmets, but their helmets are cool. You know, and the NHL, there's just a plain black helmet. I mean, that seems, and the Wolverines in college hockey are so distinctive. You see a game. You click on a game and you know exactly immediately which team is on the ice just from the helmets. And I don't get why the NHL hasn't embraced that.
Yeah, I've been pushing that for a while. I mean, even Ohio State has a really cool helmet now. When they play Michigan, they wear a helmet that looks a lot like the football helmet. And, you know, I've been pushing that for some time. And like I said, the game I'm watching right now, the Red Wings and the Oilers just have a plain white helmet. And, you know, and the Red Wings have just a plain red helmet. It'd be kind of cool to see the logo on there. And that's part of the interesting history of the NHL is the cool goalie masks and what they do. And even that isn't quite what it is now because they all have cages in front, so there's less room to do crazy cool stuff like Jerry Cheever's with his stitches marks there. But they could do still some stuff on the side and put musicians on there and other things. And so there's still a bit of that. Not the same when the whole front was painted. But I think it would be cool, and I think you could sell little – I know when I was a kid, I collected all the NFL helmets.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure I would little kid who played hockey would collect all the hockey helmets.
Yeah. But you know what? All right. NHL conversations in this day and age, unfortunately, always drift to this, is why the NHL is not getting enough attention and what's wrong with the media coverage and everything. But, you know, I think we should, as two guys who just love this game, we should, you know, and we should be, plus a lot of my listeners aren't NHL people, so they'll just hear us griping. We should really just try and sell the game, I think, what a great experience it is. Because it really is just the most passionate and the most exciting of all the major sports.
Exactly. It's a niche sport. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. You know, some of the small intimate things are the most exciting things out there. And whether it's punk rock or whether it's hockey, you know, niche is okay. I like the nicheness of it.
I agree with that. And as I said, you know, the game itself, there's just these guys play with a great intensity. And there isn't really, when you hear people gripe about the other sports, you hear them kind of gripe about things that are truly missing from hockey. People's gripe about the showboating and the poor sportsmanship. I mean, that's their biggest gripe, and you don't get that in this league and in this game.
That's right. Yeah, I mean, someone like, you know, Terrell Owens or someone like that, they could never survive in the NHL, and they could never survive in the locker room. It's just, you know, the values that the coaches and players have don't allow for that.
Right.
And if you're involved in it with as a player or as someone close to it, or if your kid plays a sport, you really come to love and cherish those values.
Right. Yeah, Mike Keenan would not stand for that.
No.
Speaking of great hair and or bad hair in hockey, I guess, depending on how you look at it.
You do what you can. You know, we're all headed down that path eventually, unless you're, you know, Mike Wallace. Hitman's 105, and he's yet to lose one follicle.
Yeah, no, I'm not mocking him for going that. It's more about the mustache, really. It's a total.
Oh yeah, true.
That's a total cheap shot.
It's time for every man on this earth who has a mustache to shave it.
And that was a total cheap shot. But, you know, again, I'm a Devils fan, and I'm still mad about 1994 with Mike Keenan, so I'm
really acceptable.
I'm allowed to do that.
On for the review, the insult stands.
Thank you, sir. So I guess let's wrap up a little bit. Just you know, I read your column, you did it. Let's talk about some of the exciting things to look forward to this season. I know you predicted Florida to come out of the basement into to a high finish.
Yeah, originally I had them last. That shows how much conviction I have. And then some of my hockey friends started to talk a lot about Florida. I looked at their roster. I still wasn't wholly convinced, but I go, all right, J-Bo Mister should make a leap up, and Nathan Horton should take a leap up. They have a good coach. They brought in Thomas Vokoun. Pretty good defense. Not a whole bunch of scoring down low. You know, Joseph Stumpel will never get the Hart Papeete. But, you know, so the Southeast, it looks, you know, a little bit weak. The Capitals off to a great start. So maybe they were the pick. But, yeah, I went with the Panthers, and right now it doesn't look too good. They're off to a slow start. But it's a long season. 82 games is a long season.
It sure is. Now, all right, this is where my bias comes in. The two teams I'm a little surprised about. I'm surprised, as much as I'd love to see the Devils continue to be the Devils, and I'm excited about the new coaching. Honestly, they need to convince me that they're going to be as competitive as they were last year.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, they have obviously, you know, they plan on playing Martin Brodeur a lot less, and that's going to be interesting if they get to a slow start, if they'll stick to that. Obviously, they're going to miss Scott Gomez a lot. He's a great playmaker, a guy with championship resume, you know, set people up, made people better, good speed, good all-around player, and so they're going to miss him a lot. But, you know, they have some good scoring up front, some good young players. Obviously, Parise and Gionta have to become really big-time players and leaders, and Eliash has to perhaps have a kind of a career year, certainly one of his better ones. And and that defense, which obviously is the weak link, is, I mean, to lose Stevens over the years and Niedermeyer and Rafalski, and now, you know, not left with too much, it will take a real extreme team effort. And, yeah, maybe they won't quite have enough, but I still think they're going to get it done.
Well, I'm glad to hear you say that. You know, I hate to seem like someone people have sometimes faulted me for doubting my team. I think it's just trying to be realistic. I cheer for every single game. And now across the river, though, you don't think that the Rangers have gone out and bought all the best free agents, which was their downfall. You think now, of course, they bought fantastic players, but you don't think that's going to be a problem. You think they're going to be?
It could be. You know, you don't know. I mean, obviously, sometimes things don't gel. You know, when the Blues went and got Wayne Gretzky, they thought he and Brett Hall would just be dynamite. It didn't work out. Mm-hmm. And there's always a bit of a risk in that. Now, of course, how this differs from the Rangers' perspective than in the past is these guys are both, you know, really in their prime. Gomez is still in his 20s. You know, back in the day when they would do this, they would sign 34-year-old chain smokers like Valery Zemensky, you know, and or Theo Fleury, who will, you know, will never write a book on, you know, five ways to succeed in life. You know, that's not going to happen. You know, he always had some issues and some didn't always make the best judgments. So, you know, this is a little bit different here. You know, Chris Drury obviously is impeccable value system, and again, Scott Gomez comes from a place that is. Was taught two-way hockey and won multiple championships. So this is a little bit different than the past. But that being said, you know, Michael Nylander and Straka and Jagr had great chemistry last year. And, you know, to bring someone else in, that's always a risk. But I think in the end, over 6-7 months, these people are winners, and they'll figure it out, and they're smart. And the Rangers, barring catastrophic injury, should be able to figure this out and be a major player and, you know, have a great chance to get to the Stanley Cup final. From the Eastern Conference. I think the Penguins, the Senators, and the Rangers, the Eastern Conference finalists will come from one of those three teams.
Okay. You know, having read your column over the years, I had no idea that you were such a Chris Drury fan. Sarcasm.
He says with tongue in cheek.
Yeah.
You know, I felt like I was the first really to introduce the hockey god to the world back in 2001. And now, and as I wrote in my column, now everyone has him. So I'll kind of, I'll gear back on that. I always like to go a bit against the grain. There's enough Chris Drury talk out there now, so people don't need me anymore. So, yeah, I'll kind of let that go this year and let the mainstream media take care of Chris Drury for now on.
Okay. So let's wrap up then. You gave your, not exactly an East prediction, but you said, you know, what your expectations are. Who do you think, I know you like the Sharks. Who do you think is going to come out of the West?
Yeah, I mean, like I picked the 8 playoff teams in each cup. That's hard enough, you know, mm-hmm. 7 months out. Certainly for between now and next June, who's going to be healthy, who gets together. Yeah, it's really, really difficult to do. But, you know, if I had I think ESPN.com asked me for predictions. I haven't seen them up on the site yet. Mm-hmm. I don't know if they made the cut, but I think I picked the Penguins and the Sharks to make the final. And if I had to bet the mortgage, or someone said, "Hey, you have to be right or you'll lose your house," then I would probably go Sharks and Rangers as a team with the best chance. But as we know, the teams, as long as you make the playoffs nowadays, because of the salary cap and all, things are evened out. You have a shot. We saw Edmonton 2 years ago; they were the 8th team in the West, but they made the finals, mm-hmm. and that can happen. Now, any team makes the playoffs has a shot.
Yeah, and that's kind of been. Historically, I mean, that's been the NHL, but yeah, even more so now, you know, even more so with the new parity.
Right. Yeah. Historically, you're right. I mean, we saw the Minnesota North Stars way back in the day when Mike O'Donnell was first in the league. You know, they were, what, under 500 in the old division format when the top four teams made it and one played four, two played three. And so, you're right. It's a game with a goaltender, and when any game has a goaltender, then, a team that's not as good can still win. And it is true. It always has been true that you have a shot if you make the playoffs.
All right. Well, you know, however it turns out, I mean, I hope you're right about the Devils, because I do kind of root for the locals, and I'm in Arizona, so.
You're right. And the only going, they don't look good. They look like it's going to be very difficult. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it is early, and you have to go with what you see. And over 82 games, the teams who the best 8 teams in each conference will make it.
Right. I'm just saying, you know, for me, rooting for the local Coyotes and the Devils, you know, I could have a long season.
Yes.
But, you know, I definitely hope you're right. And I think you're 100% right about the Coyotes, predicting them to be in a total rebuilding state. But, you know, hopefully we'll both be wrong, and they'll excite some people with their young squad.
I'm sure they will excite people, but there'll be times when, you know, they go through 1-8-1 stretches, you know.
Yeah.
And there'll be times they play well, but, you know, it's good. It's good to be bad for a while and collect top 5 draft picks and keep getting these great young players. That's good. And eventually, like Pittsburgh, it all comes together. Then you're great for 10 years.
Mm-hmm. All right. All right, John. Well, you know, I think I've probably taken up enough of your time. If you want to give one,
have.
What's up?
You have.
Okay. I'm sorry. Well, let's break here, and I just want to thank you for taking out this time to be on and get back to that Oilers Red Wings game. And thank you very much.
Hey, anytime, Jack. And I appreciate talking hockey anytime.
You are listening to Jack Mangan's podcast show, Deadpan. Is the way.
I'm stealing this stanza for you. Why the extraneous plant? Why the tabaret? Why, oh why the doily? Embroidered in daisy stitch, with margarets, I think, and heavy with gray crochet. Elizabeth Bishop, filling station.
Go ahead and run! Run home and cry, I'm...
Jack Mangan. Okay, that very last thing you just heard, as well as the intro to the show, were supplied by Kurt from St. George. Now, Kurt requested an AKA name. It's been a little while since anyone's wanted one of these, and I think the main reason is because I suck at this. But here we go. I'll give it another shot. It's Kurt from St. George, AKA Dirt McGirt. I told you I suck at this. So, all right, I guess we're into outro babble now. Sorry for the screwy show. As I said, there are a bunch of greasy jellybean predictions this week. Oh, screw it. Hang on a second. I'll tell you what they are. No, screw it. Actually, we won't do that, because then, you know, people know the comments before... People know what they're shooting for before it even reaches that point. Not that, you know, it really matters or that anyone's really going to cheat, but, you know... We'll handle it. We'll deal with it. Greasy Jellybean point will be awarded this week. And next week, in episode number 79, we will begin again with the Greasy Spoon Comments game. But in lieu of that for this week, we have some really good, or one item of really good spam, which I need to read for you. Hang on one second. Here it goes. Again, remember, this is comment spam on the website. The commenter was Mariah. Mariah, she says, I had an apology in a Mariah Carey topless person had noticed what my tongue. Permission is Mariah Carey sex Sean Porter. I was shocked. I always wondered why. Oh, okay. All right, well, this has been Outro Babble. This has been Deadpan number 78. Thanks again to John Butchagross for coming on and rapping hockey and life with us. I hope you enjoyed it, even if you're not a hockey buff. In the weeks ahead, we have two very cool author interviews, including another JB. And I'll see you soon when I return from where the sun don't shine, Seattle, Washington. No offense, Seattle. And we will whip the horse's eyes and make them sleep and cry. All right, this next bit of music is another live, semi-raw recording of me at Balticon. It's an original tune of mine. It's called Empty Bottle. And just one quick note. You'll hear somewhat near the beginning that the music just stops and there's a quick pause. And you can hear me say something. What I'm actually saying is, sorry, sir. I didn't actually screw up, but again, remember, this was at a role-playing convention, or it was a science fiction convention, and we were relegated to the hallway. George, Rob, and I were both relegated to the hallway, and during my set, one of the socially inept, shall we put it nicely, came wandering through with his fingers plugged in his ears, so I felt like I should stop the song and apologize to him. He didn't notice, but, you know, Evo, Tara fell out of his chair laughing. All right, keep it deadpan. Deadpan is the way. Deadpan for life. Keep commenting. And hey, you know what? I never want to steer this stuff, but it's been a long while. So I'm not going to aim for 1,000, but let's try to hit 800 next week. On the comments, that is, on the comments page. You guys rock. The deadpan community rocks. And I've run out of things to say. I'm not coming back. You know the rest.
Sorry, sir.
Don't do it.